Sarah Knotts, and welcome to this week's episode of Observations. I'm your host, Sovereign Sire, and I am brought to you by the good people at Julieland.com. I'm also joined by Richard Avery.
Yo. Or should I say, hi-yo. I want to be like Ed McMahon. Hi-yo.
You're reaching.
I know. Nobody knows who Ed McMahon is.
It's exceeding your grasp. I know. My guest today is Allison Stevenson. She is a writer person and a comic. And what else? And a girl person?
Yes, yes.
A lady?
That's about it. Comedian, comedian slash, writer with slash. A vagina.
With lady parts?
Yeah.
We like lady parts around here. So, okay, so I first saw you doing erotic fan fiction at the Virgil.
Uh-huh, interesting.
Okay, so I knew this would... I thought it was great.
Oh, thank you.
You did a piece on, what's the show?
It was The Big Bang Theory.
The Big Bang Theory. I don't watch TV. That's actually a show I've watched a couple times, so I wasn't completely lost.
Right.
And but I just thought it was hilarious the way you kind of did this sort of very feminist send-up of the plot of pretty much.
Yeah, it was like, mostly just making fun of the show more than it was like... trying to do a really erotic story.
Yeah. But I like the way that you were able to kind of create a whole punchline out of feminism, using the comedy to create this, like the commentary was just so biting.
Yeah.
Because I walked away when you had the line where you said something about that she gets on a chair. They're trying to teach her how to stand on a chair.
Right.
And then you stop and you said something like, she's really stupid. Like she was reading like a fake script.
So give me an idea.
I don't know. I thought I could pull it up.
Maybe you can.
But it might take too long. Sorry. Thank you.
No, I don't think it would. I think it'd be kind of awesome. I'll explain. So erotic fan fiction is this comedy night that happens.
Okay.
Just place.
So first of all, I do know Big Bang Theory. I watch it all the time.
So erotic fan fiction is this kind of it's a comedy show. Right. So you go out, it's like the Virgil, and some comedians have been given a writing prompt before the show, and some are given a writing prompt at the show.
Wow.
But they're given a TV show and told to write sort of an erotic story. And the idea is, of course, that it's funny.
Right.
So her assignment had been The Big Bang Theory. And so the idea was to like write a fan fiction about The Big Bang Theory. Do you know what fan fiction is?
Yeah.
Okay. So it's like basically doing erotic fan fiction.
Yeah.
Like for The Big Bang Theory. And so she did one where it was just hilarious because it was kind of this very feminist like...
Mm-hmm. I was actually really worried about it.
Like making fun of the tropes of most situational comedy.
Right.
Like, and the way that they use the female characters.
Right.
But it was done in this way that wasn't heavy-handed. It was just hilarious.
Oh, good.
And so that's when I started following you on Twitter. I was like, who is this girl? Because this is really awesome shit.
Oh, here we go. I found it. You want that part?
Yeah. Like, just to give him an idea of, like, what it is.
Where is it? Oh, okay, yeah. I don't know where to start. I don't want to read too much. Okay, here we go. Howard is foaming at the mouth. The sight of a woman makes him insatiable because he is a nerd and nerds don't have sex. The Indian guy can't look her in the eye because he is a nerd and being in the presence of a woman terrifies him. Sheldon, however, is composed. He could care less about Penny, unless she was a mint condition collectible superhero figurine, of course, because he is a nerd and nerds have Asperger's. Leonard is the only one able to communicate with her because he respects her. He acknowledges that what she lacks in smarts, she makes up for in social skills and perky breasts. Leonard gestures for her to have a seat. Sure, Penny, what's up? There was dialogue previously. Penny is so stupid that she stands on the chair instead of sitting on it. No, Penny, bend the knees. You always forget to bend the knees. Oh, that's right. I always forget. Penny then bends her elbow, still standing on the chair. This doesn't feel right.
And
it goes on from there.
I like that.
Yeah, that was such a highlight.
But that's such a great little challenge and exercise to like do something like that. Like,
yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, here's what we want you to do, and you really have to like come up with it. That's so creative.
I was really nervous about that show actually because I've been wanting to do it for so long, and I was just like, oh my god, how is it gonna?
How long have you been doing stand up? And is that your main passion, or is writing your passion, or you want to like do you want to be like a great stand-up comic, or do you want to be like a comedy writer? Do you not know? Because that's a good
the thing. Yeah, I don't really. I kind of just like having my material out there.
Okay.
And I love performing. So if it's like, if I get to do my comedy through performing and that can be a career, like that's great. But I'm also open to just writing. And if it happens through writing and that's great too. You know, I'm kind of just, I'll take whatever. I'll do anything.
Can I ask the question?
Yeah.
How did you start? How did you get into that? Like, did you start
to stand up?
Did you start stand up first, then write, or write then?
I mean, I was always interested in writing, but more like, you know, I took like creative writing classes and things like that. It was nothing like serious. Yeah. But then I guess I performed a lot in high school, and I was always a performer. And I was just getting sick of, like, acting, taking acting roles. Like, I did theater and stuff, but I was like, I want to do stuff that's, like, mine. Like, I wrote this, you know? So that's when I graduated college, I just immediately started doing stand-up and kind of just...
I could never do that. Like, I'm just always amazed. Like, I couldn't
You know, people always say that, but I always say if you're just, like, even thinking about it, just try it. Just do it. Because, you know, it's really not as bad as, you know... I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong, but
it's like, especially when you're that young, I think your ignorance is bliss, and it's like fearless. Like, then you get older and you realize all the consequences. Then, like, nah, I don't think I need to do that. Like, I don't know. I couldn't do it in a million years.
Did you always know you were funny?
Kinda, yeah. I always knew that I was in love with comedy. Like, I always knew that comedy was my escape or whatever. Not to sound cliche, but. I guess I started realizing I was maybe funnier than others probably when I was in high school and I started writing my own stuff and trying to perform it, but that didn't happen often. But yeah, I would just put my stuff up like on MySpace and people would be like, hey, I read that thing you put up. It was really funny. I'd be like, oh, really? Like I just...
Wow.
From there, it kind of just evolved. Like,
do you have comedians that you look up to? That you kind of say, like, that's the career I want.
I mean, it's really complicated now because, I mean, Woody Allen, you know, problematic now.
Yeah.
But.
There was a time.
It's right.
Like all of them, right? It's like.
I know. Every one of your heroes is shit. yeah. But Woody Allen is definitely the person that, like, all of his films. I saw Annie Hall when I was, like, 12. And just from there, I was like, I want to be Woody Allen, you know?
I always say he has the greatest quote about dying.
Mm.
Do you know it?
Says, I feel like he has a lot of quotes about dying. Yeah,
it's the best one ever. It's my favorite quote. It's what I live by.
Which
it's
like one?
I'm not afraid to die. I just don't want to be there when it happens.
Right. Yeah.
I always say, like, that says it all. Like, but I growing up, I loved Woody Allen. All the early stuff.
Right.
Know, Bananas and things like that.
Yeah, that's the thing. He's his first few, like his first... dozen or so films. Like, that's the thing, too. He makes so many. And, you know, I kind of admire, even still, as much as I find him problematic, I do still admire his, like, kind of fuck you attitude. Or, like, I'm just going to keep making movies. I don't care if you like them or not. Like,
did
I'm
he
not
do Blue Jasmine?
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Okay. I watched that movie. I thought, Dice Clay was good in it.
Yeah.
Because he's a great actor. I think he's a better actor than he is a comedian.
Right.
I honestly do believe that. He was amazing as an actor. But I thought that... Did you see the movie, Saw?
Yes, I did.
Did you like it?
It was kind of like terrifying for me.
I kind of...
I didn't really like it that much.
I kind of liked the premise of the movie.
It was hard for me to
but
watch.
But she was just so annoying and just so pitiful. Like, it made it hard to like... They took it over. Like, it was like, it was just no redeeming quality. You just felt like... I felt
Yeah, he doesn't do the best with portraying women in his films. Yeah. But for me, that's a huge
frustration with like a lot of stuff, like Louis or any of these shows where it's like they are really good, but at the same time, you just feel like the women are kind of like they're written as these sort of like crazy things that like happen to the protagonist.
Right.
Like
right.
There's never any kind of like.
And that,
Even with, like, even when in Louis. Like, even when he's sort of presenting himself in an unfavorable light, it's still like, it still seems like the onus of the crazy or the dysfunction is still like on the female.
Right.
And it seems like with so much great comedy, like the woman is like the banana peel, like
right.
the guy slipping on.
Totally.
Like, you know, it's kind of, it can be frustrating. The first comic that I loved was Bill Hicks. Like, that was my dad would listen to that.
Really?
Yeah.
That's too funny.
Like that was well, I'm adopted. My natural father was a big comedy fan. He's still alive. He's in Arizona somewhere. But like for me, I remember as a kid, that was how I tried to connect with him because he was my brother's older, so he was sort of very connected to my brother when my parents split up. You know, because like I was sort of born like after they were already living apart and whatever. So we just never like connected.
Right.
Like
yeah.
And had that like bond that father, because, you know, and then I was adopted when I was, you know, 3 or 4 by someone else. So he was still in my life, but we just didn't have a lot in common.
Right.
But there was this thing that he loved comedy and he loved like Lenny Bruce and Bill Hicks and all this stuff. And so I remember as a little kid, like listening to that in the car and this like, it made him happy and I wanted to make him happy. Mm. So like, I remember being really like liking the things and learning to tell jokes and he would teach me to, like, it was like the one thing that we could bond on.
Interesting.
Like,
yeah.
He would teach me jokes and I would memorize them and then say them back. And like, you know, and then he'd pull me out at parties and like, make me, you know what I mean? Like, and I didn't know why people were laughing, but it was cause I was a little kid telling very blue jokes.
Right. Right.
did you grow up on comedy?
I did. Yeah. I was an only child until pretty recently. Okay. Yeah. I got my first sibling when I was 16 years old.
Wow.
And then I got a second one when I was like 22. So, yeah, I pretty much grew up an only child and, you know, just was a very solitary person. And my thing was just locking myself in my room and just watching TV. I had a TV in my room, which was a huge mistake on my parents' part. But yeah, I just would watch like classic sitcoms, like, because like Nick at Night was just starting around mm-hmm. that time.
I'm scared what she's gonna say. Classic.
Oh like, no! Like
what you think is
Fresh Prince of Bel Air? Yeah. Like
no,
no, no. Like, legit.
Your idea
like,
of classic and my idea of classic are two different things. I think.
Well, when Nick at Night was first starting, they actually did air older sitcoms, and I would watch. Like I remember being in third grade and just being obsessed with the Jeffersons and like All in the Family and. Finding it like I remember my dad barging into my room one night because he thought I was crying, but I was just laughing really hard at an episode of The Jeffersons. Like,
oh my god!
Yeah, that was just the yeah. stuff so, I grew up.
Did something
up
happen
on.
To Wheezy?
Well, there's so my a friend of mine, Dana Mispoli, that's like a director. She always makes tweets and jokes about that there was a rape scene in All in the Family. That's the one with the
Archie Bunker.
Yeah, mm. like there's this thing where it's like the chick.
Sally Struthers.
There's one.
Enid?
Where,
no, not Enid.
No, I think it's Enid.
Edith.
Like gets there was an episode where she's raped.
Really?
Yeah. And like there's like a thing where it's like she's
I have to look.
Yeah, it's like yeah, it, like a very special that. Episode.
I think
of,
I was too young to register.
But like, but like, could have been that's her whole thing. Is like there was like music playing. Like the like she has this joke about All in the Family and like because that was a show that where it was controversial, right? It was a comedy.
Well, it was,
but
yeah,
it was
because
like,
he was a bigot and a racist.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Okay, so yeah. That's totally the right show. Okay. So it was like that. There was. But there
I don't
was
think
one
it was. I don't think it was Edith though, because that was his wife. I think it was his daughter.
Whatever it was, but this whole thing about her joke was about like how times have changed in terms of like how we treat.
Oh God, yeah.
How we treat things like that in TV, but she'll always reference that like All in the Family, like.
Wow, I need to look that up. I never.
Oh, gee, I was raped.
Like, that's Edith, yeah.
Yeah.
Did you watch, go to movies and stuff like that?
Yeah, I rented a lot.
Yeah.
I rented a lot of movies.
The classics, yeah. Like Animal House.
I mean, it's kind of similar to you. Like, it's how I bonded with my dad.
Yeah.
My dad was really into, like, watching Mel Brooks movies and stuff like that, so.
Can't go wrong there.
Yeah, and I didn't have much of a social life, so it would really, like, most of my weekends would just be, like, hanging out with my dad and watching, like, Young Frankenstein and stuff like that. And
I can tell you the best story. I think I told you the story before. It was, like, when video machines were invented, basically, and my friend...
I always wonder about the past for me. That's fascinating.
I know. My
history. Video machines.
I know. My high school friend was the first one to have a Betamax machine.
What was that?
Just before VHS. It was a Betamax machine. Tapes are dead. And he was the first one to have a machine. And we the first video we bought was Mel Brooks' Blazing Saddles. And we watched the movie over and over, like 5 times in one day. And we just thought it was like the coolest thing that you could sit there and watch a movie over and over and over. Rewind it. Play it again. Rewind it. Just couldn't believe it. It was like the most amazing thing. It was like, wow. But we didn't have to go to the theater.
I'm surprised we haven't been trying to bring those back, the Betamax.
Right, because it seems like the next step. I think someone told me they're bringing cassette tapes back.
No. Yeah.
Oh, I buy cassettes. I know record labels that sell cassettes.
Really?
Yeah. They like, yeah, that's certain crazy. Bands will release only on cassette.
Like, is it like nostalgia formats? Is it like a new thing?
I think it's that, but also I think something about it just being cheaper. I think it's just
than
cheaper.
A CD. Yeah. It can't be cheaper than a CD.
Maybe
or,
not,
or
actually.
A digital download.
Yeah, I think it's also just like
the idea of having a physical product.
Right.
People are starting to feel kind of.
And vinyl is probably more expensive.
Yeah.
I don't know how that stuff works.
I miss vinyl.
Well, and you can't travel with vinyl, really. Like, you can't take a record player with you.
Right. Like, just like a.
Yeah.
portable
record
player.
And the product itself just takes up so much space. My friend is like a notoriously avid record collector in his house.
I'm so glad I never got into that.
Like, yeah, his house is like, there's like two rooms that are just devoted to like storing the records. And then he has like special amps for it and a special way to clean it. It's like going over like, hey, I'm gonna come over, let's listen to a record.
Yeah.
You know, and he's like, okay, right? And like, it's like watching like a fine barman like make a cocktail, like like pull it out of the sleeve, put on the special like cleaner,
the special gloves.
Yeah, put on like needle. And it's like, and then we can sit down like, okay, now we can sit here and look at the Iggy Pop cross stitch pillow and listen to
that's funny. Because you know what? I know people like that.
Totally.
You know, it's,
I was
good.
Like that.
I lived in the Bay Area, and that's almost every person there.
Yeah, yeah. It's so true.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I grew up in the Bay Area.
I shouldn't put that in my stand-up. I should just... like, note to self.
Yeah.
Funny guy with records.
It's so true. And it's
but
like,
people who collect still to this day would collect vinyl. It's very serious. But yeah. It's a very serious thing with them. They're vinyl. Nothing sounds better. It's always, you know, you're like, no.
Oh, it sounds so much better. I'm like, yeah. I can't tell the difference.
Nobody can tell the difference.
But if you say so.
Yeah. It's ridiculous.
I'll take your word for it. You paid $100 for
but
this.
But I do remember.
I'll tell you.
I do remember buying comedy albums, though, back in the day. Buying a Woody Allen comedy album or a Richard Pryor or George Carlin. That was a big deal back then, was buying a lot of, you know, comedians started that whole thing with the albums.
Yeah.
You know, it was a big deal.
I think one of the few, I do have a few records, and one of them is actually Bill Cosby, which again is like, oh, well.
Be careful. Don't listen to it.
Yeah.
It might get you, drop you a roofie.
Well, I mean, it's like, how, that is like the, I don't know, it's so hard, like with social media and everything else kind of. There was a blind item that was supposed to be about Louis C.K. like in something, which is like, I mean, I won't even get into like, you know,
the rumor, or whatever.
The rumors. Yeah, yeah.
What rumors?
It was a blind item of a blind. It was like this thing where it was like Louis C.K. It was like supposedly this guy called Louis C.K. out because friends of his friend. It was like friend of a friend of a friend.
Oh.
Said that Louis C.K. did X, Y, and Z, and then the guy was saying that, so he managed to get like contacted Louis, saying like, you're doing these pervy things or whatever, and that supposedly like Louis actually called him or something, like because he was scared someone was on to him. But it was the thing was like, there was no like, in the article itself, there was, I'm like, so your only reference for the article is the guy who says that Louis C.K. emailed him. Like, that's your source. Is someone that's like, it's like so like.
But that's today's journalism.
That's pretty much.
But then, and then someone was like, in the comments, was like, this isn't surprising me and da-da-da. Like, but personally, I just don't think Louis C.K. is very funny. And then I went on Twitter and I said, you know, the only thing more dubious than the sources in the article is the contention that Louis C.K. is not funny. And someone's like, I can't believe you're making a rape joke. Like it spawned this whole thing about like, I can't believe you're making a rape joke, da-da-da-da-da.
Yeah.
I was like, I know we're in this like knee-jerk culture and I don't want to be a rape apologist, but this isn't even like a woman said that he did this. This is like a dude said that he called him out because some other woman told him, and then he called. Like the article. Right. Like I'm not being insensitive. Like what
he
I'm pointing.
Said that
what
she
I'm.
She said that he said.
Yeah.
That I heard it from a friend who said that they heard it and they read.
Right.
I was like,
what I was making a joke about was that like it was dubious claim. Like the evidence was like not dubious. Not to say that it didn't happen, but if it did, like.
That's the thing is like I would just love it if. It were possible for when shit like that happens, the person that it happens to could speak up about it,
right,
and not be victimized. But we're in a culture where it's like, you know, women know that if they do anything to go against this beloved figure or whatever, you know, it'll ruin them. And
right.
these were comedians that supposedly that this happened.
Or that it'll follow you around, because then it's like, it's not like Sarah-esque amazing comedian.
Right.
It's Sarah-esque comedian that was harassed
assaulted
by
yeah.
so-and-so. And like forever then, like, you're going to carry that around. So like, it can never just, and like, totally. I understand why as a comedian, I wouldn't come forward, because it would be this
would
thing
be
of
damaging.
Like,
damaging.
Yeah. Because even if people believed me, for the, like the rest of my comedy career, it would be like, oh, the one that was like had the thing happen to her with the guy.
Right. Yeah.
Right.
You know, yeah. And so I get to that thing where it's like, you just don't want to even be like, it's like, it's just like the Scarlet Letter. I mean, it's just kind
totally.
Of like
yeah.
the taint of
well, it's in a real, being
but,
a real
tough
spot, you know, rock
yeah, that,
in a hard place.
Yeah. And that's true about a lot of it too. Is like, I say to people all the time, like, you know, nowadays, whatever you do today, people, it'll be there forever, especially if it's on the internet. And it's like, do you want to carry that with you for the rest of your life?
And that's what I think too, like, education with men is really important, because I think it's like,
because men are stupid.
Well, I feel like a lot of people are like, oh, like
you said it, not me.
Like, so, like someone was like, oh, someone using their power to prey on. And I was like, I don't know that men perceive that they're in
that's
that position.
Definitely true.
Like I don't
yeah.
think, I don't, like, if someone was doing that, I don't think they're going like, oh, I have all this power, she can't say no. I don't think they're thinking that. I think
yeah.
some are.
Right.
But I think that a lot of them, they just don't realize like how they're being perceived.
Yeah,
it's
totally.
it's like they just think they're just being the same person they've been for the past 20 years. They're not taking
and
into
that
account
it's okay,
that
you know.
And they're not taking into account yeah. that like they're a huge celebrity now. And so, like, a girl's not going to feel as comfortable going, like, fuck off, dude.
Right.
Like, you know what I mean? It's like they don't realize that, like, they kind of now are in a different position. And so I think a lot of times, like, I'm more for, like, educating men and saying, like, listen, this is how it feels to be the female in that scenario. Because
yeah.
you may not realize that, like,
but also
you know,
too,
what's going on.
Don't we both agree, though, that there's also a lot of dumb girls out there that are just a bunch of dumb hoes that want to fuck a bunch of dumb guys and be a bunch of groupies and,
yep.
you know, like.
Sure.
Absolutely.
I mean, yeah.
There's
definitely
the good and the bad and the ugly
yeah,
and everything.
Yeah.
Right.
But those girls aren't likely to, like, accuse someone of, like, you know.
No. They're yeah. going to just be like, yeah, I fucked so-and-so.
Right.
Right. It would
yeah.
be like there would be something they'd brag about yeah. and not want to hide, you know?
Yeah, and my thing is, like, I have no problem with, like, dudes. Like, if a dude figures out that because he's famous, he can, like, fuck fans. And, like, if the two people leave the exchange happy, the girl's like, I got to fuck my idol. Yay.
Right.
And go home. And he's like, I got to fuck a really hot girl. Yay. I don't think there's anything wrong with that.
No,
it's
no,
like, it's like she gets
consensual.
To go have a...
Yeah,
she
as
gets
long
to
as
tell
it's
a story and, like, you
enthusiastic,
know...
Enthusiastic,
yeah.
You know? But...
Yeah, but it's like, I think it's... In situations like that, I'm kind of like, I don't know, if the person in question was guilty, I don't know that they're necessarily thinking, like, I have the power to make or break someone's career, and I'm going to use that opportunity to pull yeah. out my dick. Like I don't think people are thinking that way. Like,
yeah, I don't know.
Or maybe I just, you know, like when you love someone, you're like, please don't be terrible.
Well, I mean, like, it seems like... Cosby definitely.
Oh, well, yeah, that's a whole different.
That's a whole,
like,
different.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like,
drugging girls.
Right.
Yeah.
There's so much premeditated.
Yeah. And, like, what about the
that's
doctor
that's
that was
a power
that's
thing.
Making
like
a
what
plan.
About the doctor that was giving him that stuff too? It's like someone was supplying with the drugs to do it as well.
Right. Totally.
Do you think that, like, Cosby goes to the doctor and says, "You know, I got this problem. I need to get stuff to knock me out cuz I need to sleep better." And they're like, "Okay." And then now the doctors later find out, "Oh, he was using it to rape girls." It was like, "Great, you know."
I mean, wasn't there something also like I don't want to get too much into it.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, it was just everybody knew. Everybody. I remember somebody telling me they worked at late night. Like a long time ago, and it was always like a known thing that Cosby was this guy. Like, he said that whenever Cosby came to set, like, they would tell all the women not to be in the room alone with him. Like, this is something, and there's a lot of comedians now that are like on the rise that I've heard things about, and it's just like,
yeah.
You don't, you know, you want to protect yourself, and it's really selfish, but it's like, if I call this guy out, I'm gonna be in a shitstorm,
right.
So I don't, and I want to avoid that, and it's really complicated.
Is it worth it? Like,
can I ask, like, because you're a girl and you're doing comedy and, like, all this stuff comes out, like, does it affect your decision to do it? I mean, like, how does that, like, do you feel like when you come in, do you feel like you're coming into kind of a hostile environment?
When I perform?
Just, yeah.
I feel fortunate. I've kind of attached myself to a scene in LA that's much more, you know, progressive. And,
right.
you know, I definitely avoid performing at comedy clubs, and it's for that reason. I perform only, like, at the shows that I know are the kind of show I want to be on. And right. I never go to the Comedy Store, just avoid it at all costs. And it's not like, I'm not saying like they're horrible shows, but I know that in that environment, they're expecting a type of comedy from a woman that I don't want to do. And it's not my kind of comedy. I don't want to reinforce stereotypes about women. I don't want to have to do really hacky material. And I feel like if I went that route of going the club route, it would just be a lot harder for me.
What do you call, like, what's hacky material?
Just like, you know, there's all these, I hear a lot of, there's hacky material, like when a comedian is like, this is my mother is so foreign. This is what she sounds like, you know, like okay. Stuff like that. But also just like, you know, when there's a lot of women who do jokes that are just like, you know, I don't order salads. I'm a real woman. You know, just like stuff like that where it's like they're trying to separate themselves from other women.
Right.
And they're like, I'm not like other girls. I watch sports. And all the jokes are just like kind of more man-pleasy. And it's not right. really doing anything different or progressive.
Well, I think I was going to say, because I grew up with lots of female comedians in my life, watching lots of them. And I always say, like any comedian, there's good comedy and bad comedy. There's good comedians and bad comedians. And the stuff right. that I think, the ones that the cream rises at the top and the ones that are good are going to last and be there for a while. And the ones that are just these, I want to say, like you're saying, dumb jokes, like or reaching for the dumb joke, the easy joke.
Mm-hmm.
That stuff doesn't last. And those people are
gone. Some of these women, though, I think are pretty successful.
There are a couple of very successful female comedians that I think drive me insane.
Right, totally.
It's just like where
they
like,
get TV shows and
yeah.
Or it's like to me, what's the most frustrating are the ones that kind of like come right up to the edge of being interesting and mm-hmm. then stop because you know they're like holding back. There's right. one comedian that's like kind of having a moment right now, and she drives me insane because she'll write these op-ed pieces or whatever. And you see that there's like a person in there.
Right.
That has some really interesting shit to say, but she ain't never going to say it.
Right.
And it's totally. Like, I'm like, I want to catch up with that comedian in 5 years when like, she like has fallen off the map and now she's like coming back up and she's decided to like actually like say some meaningful shit.
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
To me, it's almost more frustrating when you encounter like that kind of one where it's like you can see that like there actually is like a critical thinker in there
right
that actually has some really interesting commentary. And it's like they'll go and like I was reading a review of like her latest special and it was like some critic was saying the exact same thing and it's like I'm not the only one that sees it that was saying like, oh, there's this moment in the show where she says this thing and it's like you get excited because you feel like, oh, she's about to kind of go into like this territory where she's really gonna like be making some commentary and then yeah. she just like drops it, like goes on to the next thing. Like it's just like
that's the thing is there's a lot of fear attached, especially for women, to like really say what's on your mind, like especially when it comes to, because like I feel like my comedy is very critical of the way men treat me and mm-hmm. I make it funny and I have male fans, so I'm not like, you know, I'm not saying that I hate men in my comedy, but I could see how people who don't know who I am, who come to see me, could perceive me as being very like, whatever, like, you know, misandrist or whatever the fuck. And it's just like, no, I'm really just, it's your turn to get some criticism. Like, women have been the subject of jokes for so long from male comedians. And it's just time that you become the butt of the joke. And it hurts a lot of men because, and that's the thing is like a lot of men say women aren't funny because it's just, it's so hard for them to step outside of their narrative. And it's like, try to just, I know you don't know what it's like to have a period, but don't say that it's like shitty, like that it's, you know, it's not real comedy for a woman to talk about her period. You know, I think it's totally fine to do a period joke and people look down on it like it's this horrific thing. And it's like, no, it's what happens to our body. And we don't ever talk about it because we have been raised to think that it's this disgusting thing that we can't talk about. And it's like, I want to talk about my period on stage because I talk about myself and my life. And I don't want to be scared that I'm going to be considered hack or whatever just because I want to talk about something that's going on in my body that just because you can't relate to it. Sympathize. I can't relate to your dumb dick jokes about, you know, waking up with a weird boner or whatever, but you know,
but you can roll with it.
Yeah, I you know, I can understand on some level.
But it's so funny. I agree with 100% with what you're saying, and it's like I always found it interesting to me when those And it went, there's, I don't know who said it, but it was making, people were talking about like how women can't be funny. Was it Jerry Lewis that said that or something like that? Like,
I would not be surprised.
Jerry Lewis is like the first one to kind of like, women aren't funny.
And, right. and like something like that. And these comedians, like, I'm always like, first of all, 99% of my friends are women. So I'm never going to say anything bad about them because they're going to kick my ass. But I always say like, I sit there and say all the time, like, good comedy is good comedy. Funny, right. smart, intellectual comedy is good comedy.
Totally.
And
yeah.
funny is funny. I don't care who it is. And there's, I've seen plenty of female comics that are funny as shit. You know what I mean? They're just funny as funny. I mean, whether you know, I don't even know what gender has to do with being funny.
Yeah, but you're like super progressive, dude.
Am I? I think I'm old fashioned.
No.
Like you were saying, like you know, when you say the, first thing I think of when you're like, yeah, you know, women getting being the butt of men's joke. The first thing I'm thinking of is Henny Youngman going, you know, take my wife, please take
right.
my wife.
Totally. Yeah, like, yeah, I mean, yeah. like,
that's how old I am.
You know, my wife is getting so fat. My yeah, wife is exactly. getting so old, or she's so annoying. And it's
yeah,
like,
take my wife. Take my
yeah,
wife.
It's yeah, yeah. Like, and it's that's been the joke for so long.
Well, I guess that's like why it kind of surprises me at all that women even get into comedy, because it just seems like it's so
male.
That like because right. because you're kind of fighting against that current. It's like you're like a salmon sort of. It's like sort of. Like, yeah, it's like you're kind of swimming up against like just this torrent of material that's like.
But it's come yeah, a long,
yeah.
long way.
Oh, it definitely mean, has.
And it's
yeah.
and it's truly amazing. And a lot of women have broken down those doors like big time, like really kicked them in and done amazing things. I mean, whether you go, I go back to the early days of Saturday Night Live and seeing Gilda Radner and Jane Curtin and these women just doing stuff. And Lily Tomlin was like amazing for us when we were kids mm-hmm. on Laugh-In and things like that.
She's on a show now. Frankie. And
I know. I want to see
yeah.
it with Jane Fonda,
Grace
right?
and Frankie. Which Baron is Vaughn is in that.
Huh?
Baron Vaughn. Do you know?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
He's coming on next week.
Oh, tight. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Jane Fonda's on that show.
Yeah, but it was like, I was like one of those things where it's like, I don't know. In some ways, it feels like there was some like backsliding in between, because it's like, oh, yeah, Lily Tomlin's amazing. And then like, maybe there was like a dip of like, you know,
no.
and then like.
I mean, I grew up on like Lily Tomlin, Joan Rivers. Mm-hmm. I even saw, you know, on TV, on especially for us, it was where we saw comedians mostly was like on Tonight Show or Merv Griffin or Mike Douglas.
Right.
So we would see Toadie Fields, you'd see Moms Mabley, you would see all these women. And I grew up with it. It was like, then of course there was Lucille Ball, you know, like forget about it. And she was the funniest lady ever, you know, so.
Right.
But it was like, there was a lot of it. I just don't know. That's what I'm saying. Like, I think when men say stupid things like that, or it's like, dude, you're just like, you weren't paying attention. You were missing out on stuff.
It's just, you don't want women to be funny
yeah.
when you say that. You just, in your mind, you've already made this
decision.
I think
women are hilarious. You should meet all
no,
my
not
friends.
No, not you directly. Just yeah. that person.
You should meet all my friends, right, Sav? Like, all our girls we know, they're all funny.
They're hilarious. Lots of funny hijinks.
Yeah.
So I think that kind of wraps things up for this particular episode.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
You know, we're sort of on a awkwardly just stopping right in the middle. Anyway, can you tell people how to find you?
Yeah, I'm on Twitter at justaboutglad.
That's great.
Yeah.
Not exactly, but just about.
Just about. It's a song. I don't know. I created my Twitter account before I ever started comedy and just stuck with it. Where else? I don't know. Just Twitter, I think.
Is that where people can find you for shows and things like that? You'll tweet.
Yeah, I usually tweet when I do shows. I have a weekly comedy show in Chinatown in Los Angeles.
What is it called?
It's called Blessed.
And when is it? Where is it?
It's 8 p.m. at the Grand Star in Chinatown.
All right. I should come check it out.
Yeah.
What day of the week is it?
Oh, Wednesdays.
Wednesdays. All right. And I am Sovereign Sire. You can find me on Twitter at Sovereign Sire. And on my blog, ilovesov.com, where it's amazing all the time. And you can find me on the Wisecrack channel on YouTube. And my show is Boss Bitches of History. Bye, everybody.